Blog Talk Radio.
Much for tuning in to another week of Tez Talks, and I am your host, Tez, and I'm here to talk about different tax situations, break it down so that the average everyday person will be able to understand these difficult and very elusive tax laws that we have. To tell you a little bit about myself, you can find me on Instagram at TaxExpert. That's my handle. And I have 2 decades of experience to incorporate accounting, corporate and individual taxation, as well as teaching and writing on tax and financial issues and handling IRS audits. My inbox on Instagram is open for you guys to message me with questions that you may have in regards to today's show or any past show that you may have listened to. You can also access the comment section of this show so that you can get additional information. I do try to post things in the comment section as often as possible. And if you have questions, you can post it there too. I will read them. So definitely check that out. And also, you can call in to the show if you have questions. The phone number is 347-857-4302. As long as it's a live show, you will be able to call in and speak with me. Again, the phone number is 347-857-4302. So I want to first talk about something that I've been meaning to – you know what? Actually, let's see here. Yes, I first want to go over reasons to amend. We have the top 5 reasons why you should amend your tax return. Okay, and this is very important information for people who may be facing these particular types of situations. All right, so reason number 1, okay, you made a master data error. You were filing your return and you submitted it and you didn't realize that you may have transposed a number when you were entering your income or something of that sort. Maybe you made a charitable donation and you didn't correctly figure out how much the donation was worth and you realize that you made a mistake. In those situations, you were able to amend your return. I mean, it could result in you owing more or less, but if it's something that is significant, regardless of what the end result is going to be, you should still amend it. However, you usually would not need to amend your return if you incorrectly entered W-2 income. The reason why is because the IRS also receives this W-2, and they'll compare it with what's reported and then correct the error. Actually, you can find this information on the IRS website because it instructs taxpayers not to amend for this type of situation. But if you do have that situation and you want to be on the safe side, you can go ahead and amend. I'm not giving you legal advice on this. You know, I'm just giving you information so that that way you can make a firm decision on what you're going to do, okay? Now, just beware because there is a statute of limitations for refunds, and that's 3 years from the due date that the return was due, all right? So if the IRS hasn't automatically made the correction, say if the W-2 issue is the problem, you put in the wrong income and they didn't make the correction and you have a refund coming, please do not let the statute of limitations expire before filing the amended return. I am very pro correct return, if that's a term. I'm making it a term. I am very much for filing the correct return. Okay, so regardless of whether you owe or you don't owe, you find out that there's a big difference and it should be reported, you should go ahead and do that so that you don't have any issues or problems later on down the road. Okay. Number 2 would be for people who use the incorrect filing status. So this may go for people who are single parents or caregivers of elderly parents or maybe even recently married or divorced people. Sometimes they use the wrong status, and you may actually qualify for something else. And by using the wrong status, you may miss out on crucial tax benefits. All right. Now, amending your return may, again, result in either you paying additional taxes or you receiving a refund. But if you find out that this amount is substantial, you need to make the correction. Number 3. This is for people who don't realize that they have a tax benefit that they qualify for. Okay, so you're not a tax professional. You're doing your own return. Maybe you're using a particular software that you heard about, and you perhaps overlooked something. And because of you overlooking it, you missed out on a lot of tax dollars. This actually happens very frequently. All right, In those type of situations, you should amend your return to make that correction. But then again, on the people who accidentally claim a benefit that they should not have claimed because they weren't entitled to it, all right, and the same rule applies. Number four, you've had investing activities that could affect your return. So what this typically means is, like, in the case of a person who may realize a capital gain or a capital loss, capital gains and losses occur when you sell an asset, okay? But in certain cases, people may have securities which become worthless. Now, when a security becomes worthless, it results in a capital loss that needs to be reported in the year it is deemed worthless, not in the year to discover the stock, okay? It has to be reported in the year that it has happened. And in many cases, you may have to amend a prior year return for that capital loss. Now, this can be significant since you're limited to only deducting $3,000 in capital losses from all your other income, and it can result in a capital loss carryover for several years. Now, again, this is one of those situations that you need to look into and see if it applies for you. But if it's so, you may definitely, you know, go ahead and amend your return so you can have that tax benefit of the capital loss. And now number five is, say you were due a W-2 or a 1099 and you didn't receive it at the time that you prepared your tax return. And then all of a sudden, surprise, you get something in the mail and you're like, wait, what is this? Okay. So even though you already filed your tax return, this, you know, item or form should be on there. So what you'll need to do is amend your return in order to add it on. Now, I just wanted to leave you guys with four tips here so that way you can use this as a little guideline. So just remember that amending your return can be a cumbersome process, especially if you're self-employed or if you have a lot of investing activities. So please don't do it alone. Seek a professional, okay? And find out also if it's really worth it or if it's necessary. There may be such situations, as I mentioned above, where it's really not required to do so because you don't want to spend the money amending your return if there's really not a need to do it. But if you are by law required to do so, you would want to do that. And the last, amend their federal 1040, but they completely forget about their return. So make sure when you're facing this issue. Okay, I'm going to take a break for music, and then I'll be back with the next topic. Hey guys, welcome. Welcome back. This is part 2 of Tez Talks Taxes. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, if you need to contact me or ask a question, you can find me on Instagram. My handle is Tax Expert. Now, before I get into my second topic, I just want to give a shout out to our sponsors. First, we have ME Productions. They will handle all of your digital needs. You can find them on Facebook, which is ME Productions with a Z. Or you can shoot an email to them at heyme.tv@gmail.com. I will put their email in the comment section of this show so that way it will be easier for you to contact them. Our next sponsor is iCraveWear. Okay, you can find them at iCraveWear.com. I'll put that in the comment section. If you use the code PREGAME at checkout, you'll get 15% off. I want you to check out their line of hoodies and tees. They have actually a fax line, which is really good. And also they have a Time Heals All Wounds dad hat that is awesome. Our other sponsor is Lit BK. Please check out their Star Power tees and other pieces, which are inspired by Brooklyn, New York, and pop culture. Use the code PREGAME is LIT on their website, which is litbkny.com, and you'll get 20% off of your purchase. I'm also going to put their information in the comment section for you. Okay, so now let's get into our next topic, which is in regards to, you know, tax breaks for higher education. So a lot of times these tax breaks are for people who have expenses, obviously. Now, there's a term. I had a question from someone. They asked me to explain what are qualified scholarships. So I'm going to first answer that question. All right. The Internal Revenue Code, Section 117. So if you have, you know, the internet and you want to look up this code, just type the IRC, Section 117, and you'll be able to follow it. But it basically describes that a qualified scholarship means any amount received by an individual, such as a scholarship or fellowship grant, to the extent that the individual establishes that such amount was used for qualified tuition and related expenses, okay? So a qualified scholarship received by a student is excluded from gross income if the student is a candidate for a degree at a qualified educational organization. All right, so the qualified scholarship must be used for expenses such as qualified tuition, the cost of enrollment, fees, books, supplies, and other expenses that are required, that's a key word, required to take the course. When it comes to issues like room and board or travel, so you have to take the bus to school, or other expenses that are not required, you know, your description of a requirement is not the IRC's description of a requirement, okay? But something that is not required is not to be included as a qualified expense. I hope that helps. If not, send me a message, and I'll talk to you one-on-one. Okay, so now I'm going to go into two credits that you can take onto your tax return. Actually, there's three of them, okay? First is the American Opportunity Credit, and then there's the Lifetime Learning Credit, and then I'll say the third one after these. Now, in a nutshell, the American Opportunity Credit offers a maximum tax credit of $2,500 per eligible student. You have to use this if you're in, you don't have to use it, but this credit is available for the first 4 years of post-secondary education. And depending on the circumstances, up to 40% of this credit is refundable. The credit does begin to phase out for people who have earned over $80,000. And that's for the year. If your income is over $80,000, this credit will begin to phase out, which means that you may possibly receive $0 for this credit. If you're married, then the phase out period is at $160,000. Now, when it comes to the Lifetime Learning Credit, it offers a maximum credit of $2,000 tax return. Okay, so whereas the American Opportunity Tax Credit was $2,500 per student, The lifetime learning credit is $2,000 per tax return. Okay, now a student is eligible for this credit if they are enrolled in one or more courses at a qualified institution. The IRS gives an example and a description of what a qualified institution is. You can look it up. If you still have questions, again, you can reach out to me. Just like the American Opportunity Credit, the Lifetime Learning Credit has a phase out, which is $55,000. Okay, now there is another credit called the tuition and fees deduction. This deduction is usually beneficial if you don't qualify for the American Opportunity or the Lifetime Learning Credit. The thing that's a little different about this deduction is that what it does is reduces your earned income, or actually just your income period, by up to $4,000. So it is claimed as an adjustment to your income. Okay, and you can even claim this credit if you don't itemize your deductions. So it's available to you. I tell people to look and see which one not only do they qualify for as number one, but number two would give them the better benefit. So definitely keep this one in mind when you're, you know, trying to see which credit is the better option. Now, I do want to cover Coverdell, the Education Savings Plan, as well as the 529 plan, which is the qualified tuition program. Okay, so the Coverdell Education Savings Account actually is a tax-exempt trust or custodial account that is created exclusively to help pay for qualified education expenses of a designated beneficiary. Okay. So contributions are limited to $2,000 per year, and they must be made in cash, and they are not deductible. Keep that in mind, all right? Now, even though the contribution amount is low, other people can contribute up to $2,000 also. So say the grandparent or another relative or someone of that sort, you know, even a neighbor may be able to contribute for your child up to $2,000, okay, into this particular account. Okay, now the amount of the qualified expenses could be reduced or affected by certain scholarships, fellowship grants, the American Opportunity Credit, the Lifetime Learning Credit, and a qualified tuition plan, as well as other tax-free educational benefits. So, you want to keep that in mind, too, because if you are getting other credits or tax benefits, it may actually affect the amount that you have available here for your expenses. Now, amounts that are not used for education are includable in your gross income, along with a 10% addition to tax penalty. So you got to remember, too, that if you're using this money, you want to use it towards qualified education expenses, because if not, you're going to get taxed on it and penalized on it. Okay, now we're going to actually, I want to mention one more thing before I move on. These expenses actually are for elementary school through graduate level education, and it includes tuition, fees, books, supplies, equipment, special needs expenses, uniforms, tutoring, and so much more. So this gives you a wide range of stuff that you can use it for, and also a long time period. Again, like I mentioned, it's from elementary through grade level school, okay? So definitely look into this particular type of account and see if it could work for you. Now, the qualified tuition program, which is a 529 plan, okay, this is a prepaid a prepaid plan, all right? And there are actually two types. One type is, again, the prepaid. I don't know why I can't say this word. It's like a tongue twister for me. The prepaid plan, and the other one is the college savings plan, okay? So now the prepaid plan is paid into, you start now paying into it, and it's for future education. Okay, so the concept is to save money on the cost of attending college. Now, this plan allows individuals to prepay for tuition credits or make cash contributions in behalf of a beneficiary for payment of qualified higher education expenses. Now, the disadvantage to this plan is that it may adversely affect the amount of financial aid available to the student. So definitely keep that part in mind when you're looking into this, okay? Not only are there 529 plans, but there are also 529 ABLE plans. So if you have a disabled dependent, you may be able to look into this 529 ABLE, that's A-B-L-E plan, to see what advantages it can give you, all right? So now we're going to go into the second type of 529 plan, which is called the College Savings Plan, okay? And this is established for students, even though prepaid tuition is not permitted. Okay, so these plans are pretty easy to set up, and they offer more flexibility, and they are unlikely to affect the financial aid eligibility, such as the prepaid plan. Now, in regards to both plans, you need to know the following. So distributions are not generally included in your income or the income of your beneficiary as long as it does not go over the beneficiary's higher education expenses. And qualified expenses include tuition, fees, books, supplies, and equipment that is required by the institution, plus other costs, such as room and board and other things, depending on the requirements and if the student is enrolled at least half-time. So I hope this information was very helpful to you. I hope it helps you figure out some decisions that you will need to make or at least spark your interest into looking more into these plans and finding out which one will work best for you. I'm going to take a short break, and then I'll be back shortly.
When he called my name, he was a familiar face from a chapter in my past. Talked for a while, let him out of bed. Said that he would see my day. Told me that was gonna last, showing me her photograph. And all the feelings that I thought were gone came rushing back to me at once. Tried to smile and not the way I felt. But I was thinking to myself, the way things used to be, shed a couple laughs with memories, talked about the things that changed, some for good and some for bad, then he said goodbye and he paid for lunch, promised that we'd always keep in touch, got my bags and grabbed my thoughts, walked away and that was that, and all the feelings that I thought were gone, came rushing back to me. Try to smile and hide the way I felt, but I was speaking to myself.
family house, supposed to breathe with no air.
Tez Talks Taxes. Again, if you have questions, you can reach out to me on Instagram. My handle is Tax Expert. Please inbox me and I'll be able to answer your questions, or check out the comment section of this show and you'll get information. I do try to post as frequently as possible. So let's talk about this next topic. This is actually my tax tip, and I'm going to leave you off with this information. I think a lot of people face this particular challenge, and that's why I chose it to be the highlight of this evening. Okay, this is in regards to people who are thinking about tapping into their retirement savings. I need you guys to really consider the repercussions that could happen when you do this. Okay, a lot of times it's tempting to people because they're looking for cash for a specific purpose. However, if you're under the age of 59 and a half, and you do this, you will most likely have to pay a tax on the dollar amount plus a 10% early distribution penalty for doing so. But I do have some good news. There are a number of exceptions in which the 10% early distribution tax penalty does not apply. So first, the first exception is if you make a withdrawal from your retirement plan to pay medical expenses, all right? If you withdrew from medical expenses, you won't have to pay the penalty. You should keep proof of what you paid because in event of an audit, you will need to show that that's what you withdrew the money for. If not, if you can't prove this, they will assess the penalty to you. The next one is that if you are disabled, okay? Now, you're considered disabled if you can furnish proof that you cannot perform any substantial gainful activities because of a physical or mental condition, all right? So a physician must actually certify your condition. The next one is if you made an IRA withdrawal as an unemployed individual to pay for medical insurance premiums. That's pretty much self-explanatory. Again, it's in line with, you know, having medical costs, but you must have received unemployment compensation for at least 12 weeks during the year in order for you to qualify for this particular one, okay? The next one is an IRA withdrawal to pay higher education expenses. So withdrawals made during the year for higher education expenses for yourself, your spouse, or your children, or even your grandchildren are exempt from early withdrawal penalty. You must have proof of all of the stuff I'm mentioning. I just want to throw that in there so that you're aware. You can't say you didn't know because I told you. You must have proof. The next one, IRA withdrawals to build, buy, or rebuild your first home. All right, you do need to look up and find out if you qualify or if you are considered to be a first-time home buyer for this particular exception, all right? Now, if you are, then your distributions must be used buy, build, or rebuild that home, all right? This exception applies only to the first $10,000 of withdrawals used for this purpose, and if you're married, you and your spouse can each withdraw up to $10,000 penalty-free from your respective IRA account, all right? The next one is IRA withdrawals annuitized over your lifetime. To qualify, the withdrawals must continue unchanged for a minimum of 5 years, including after you reach age 59 and a half. And the very last one is employer retirement plan withdrawals. To qualify, you must be separated from service and be of age 55 or older in that particular year, or elect to receive the money in substantially equal periodic payments after your separation from service. So now that you're aware of this information provided above, you can, you know, research more into it, reach out to your particular tax professional, or even reach out to me if you have questions to see if you qualify for this or need assistance in doing so. Because, you know, this penalty can be costly and if you need the money for specific reasons that can qualify for you to not have to pay the penalty, why not take advantage of these, you know, tax benefits that are available to you as long as you are eligible for them. Thank you for listening in to Tez Talks Taxes. I really appreciate you guys. I do want to tell you about the next upcoming shows that are going to be on Pregame Radio. So first, on Thursday nights at 9 p.m., we have the Realist Radio Show. This is with Tasha Nicole Wright and Alyssa Noriega. Please tune in. On Friday at 10 p.m., we have the Pre-Game Radio Show with Brooklyn Black and Hoffa. And on Sunday at 1 p.m., we have Love, Peace, and Slander with Lady Steele and Mr. Earl Grey. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll see you guys next week. Have a great weekend.
Listen to the song here in my heart, a melody I start but can't conceive. Listen to the sound from deep within. It's only beginning to find relief. Pushed aside and turned into your own, all 'cause you won't listen. Someone here inside, someone I thought.